Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, this is Rabbi Michael Katz here with you. It is Judaism 101.9. It's great to be with you on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon here in the Highveld. It is a beautiful day, and it is a day that hopefully brings you great and good news and a positive energy going forward. It is also a very special date in the Chai FM offices, in that it is a very special birthday of one of the stalwart staff of Chai FM. It is Craig's birthday, so your birthday wishes I will convey to him right now as he sits here in front of me in the studio. So happy birthday, Craig, and please God for many more happy, healthy years. But it is a significant date from a Jewish perspective as well. And that is that today is the 19th day of Cheshvan. So what is significant about the 19th day of Cheshvan? Well, you know, if you think about the significance of almost every date in Cheshvan, each and every one of them has kind of a similar importance, in that we talk about them as being Mar Cheshvan. Each one is a part of this Mar Cheshvan, and usually interpreted, as we've said before, Mar being bitter, that each day of Cheshvan has a bitterness attached to it, in that we come after the month of Tishrei, and each day in the month of Cheshvan, which follows after the month of Tishrei, which was so power-packed with so many simchas and so many yomim tovim and so many beautiful days, whether they were directed towards tshuva or whether they were directed towards simcha or whatever their get-up was actually for each and every one of us. Here we come to Mar Cheshvan, a little bit bitter. The days don't seem to have the same hop, skip, and jump in their step. They're not as active, as involved. And yet, each day in the month of Cheshvan has a little bit. And this is where the second interpretation of the word Mar comes in. Mar can mean a drop. A drop, not a drop in the ocean, but a drop from the pail of godliness, of kedusha, of holiness, that we are supposed to take drop by drop from the time of Tishrei and integrate it into the days of the month of Cheshvan. So, if you come to the 19th of Cheshvan, just remember that this is 101.9, where the number 19 appears there as well. But the number 19 has so many other significances, in that it is Chai plus 1, 18 plus 1. It is one day more, one step closer to where we should be in our lives. A little bit of Chai, a little bit of life, and then adding one day, adding it and making it even more. It is Chai plus one, and hopefully all our lives and everything about our lives will be in the attitude of Chai plus one, increasing, making it a little bit bigger, a little bit better, a little bit more than the day before. It's strange, on the computer that is sitting in front of me, there are the numbers, 18, 18. Not sure what that is doing in a Chai FM studio where you've got 101.9, should be 19, 19, but we have here the number 18, 18, spelling out life and life, and hopefully it is all about life and all about joy and all about happiness that we can continue to speak each and every day. Now, if we look at, as I always like to do at the beginning of this show, if we look at the days that lie ahead, the first date to come to mind is actually tonight and tomorrow, where we have the 20th of Cheshvan. Tonight at sunset, we will go into the 20th of Cheshvan. And the 20th of Cheshvan commemorates two significant dates that I would like to mention. I'm sure there's a lot of other stuff that anybody can talk about, but here, two dates that I would like to mention. Date number one is that Chof Cheshvan, the 20th of Cheshvan, is the birth date of Rabbi Shalom Dovber of Lubavitch, who was born in 1860, and he was the fifth Lubavitch Rebbe. Now, why that is significant is because there is so much about the life of the Rebbe Rashab, as he was known, Rabbi Shalom Dovber Schneerson. He was, having been born in 5621 or 1860, in that he was kind of instrumental in setting up or in blazing the trail forward of Chabad in its move out of Lubavitch, which wasn't something that they wanted to do. Remember, the town of Lubavitch was a town in Russia, and moving out of there was something that they were forced to do. He didn't do it as something that he really wanted to do, but it happened to be during World War I when he was forced to settle in Rostov-on-Don in southern Russia, moving out of there, fleeing because of the advancing troops who were coming closer and closer, etc., and it became dangerous to stay behind. And in his final years, he began the heroic battle, which was carried out by his successor and his son, the next leader of Chabad, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok Schneerson, who we call the Friedrich Rebbe, the previous Rebbe, who had to fight against the communist regime, because of course it was in 1917 that there was the Russian Revolution. And so turning from the difficulties that the Jewish people in that part of the world faced under the Tsar and the Russian Christian dominated church and so on, and all the difficulties that they had to go through, he now had to turn things around and refocus and realize that there was a new enemy on the block, the communists, who came in armed as they were with a lot of Jewish input and impact, and people who knew everything about Yiddishkeit, about Judaism and about Hasidism and so on, who turned against their people. This became the new frontier, actually, for the Chabad movement, for the Lubavitcher Hasidim, and for many who had to rise up and fight against communism and its attempts to destroy Judaism, attempts to destroy godliness in that part of the world. He passed away in Rostov in 1920, but today marks his birth date. We've got to remember that he, the Rebbe Rashab, took over from his father, Reb Shmuel of Lubavitch, in 1882. And over the next 38 years, he wrote and delivered some 2,000 mamorim, which is discourses of Hasidic teaching, including the famed Hemshech, which contained the profound analytical treatment of Chabad Hasidism. And in 1897, he also established the Tomchei Tmimim name, or the Tomchei Tmimim Yeshiva. The real structure of the Chabad Yeshivas revolves around that name, Tomchei Tmimim, an institute of Jewish learning to integrate the body and the soul, Talmudic and legal studies with the philosophical and mystical of Torah, into a cohesive living whole. And it was this unique form of education that he wanted to give to the students, who he named Tmimim, Tomim. Tmimim is pure, complete, sincere, whole individuals. This was the idea of why he set up those yeshivas, to make everything really proper, integrated, and a mode of living and operation for a modern Jew and for Hasidim everywhere. So, birth date of Rabbi Shalom Dov Ber on the 20th of Cheshvan, Chof Cheshvan, tonight and tomorrow. Powerful day. Tap into that energy. Think about what you can do and how you don't have to confront the enemies of the Tsar or the enemies of communism and so on, where they were all out absolutely to destroy Judaism and to destroy you. But we can ourselves stand up and do as he set that example of standing up for what is right, of doing what is correct, of pushing and prodding and hoping and growing and making Judaism alive and well, Torah accessible to everybody, mitzvahs accessible to everybody, and trying to integrate it all into the lives of the people around us. It also happens to be a yahrzeit, much more recently, of someone who had a great impact on the modern Jewish world, and that is, it is the anniversary to tonight and tomorrow of the yahrzeit, the passing of Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, passed away in 2020. It's hard to believe that that is already 4 years ago. This great leader, philosopher, respected moral voice, authored over 30 books. And of course, he served as the chief rabbi of the United Hebrew Congregations of the Commonwealth from 1991 to 2013, and he took his seat in the House of Lords in October 2009. Just a little bit about him. He was born in 1948 in London, planning to become a lawyer until the Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, directed him to the rabbinate. He was a towering figure who counseled social and political leaders and others, close friend of kings, as well as a great prolific writer and deliverer. We had the privilege of hearing him here several times when he came out, the most recently, I think, for the Sinai in Darba, and his great writings brought relevance and eloquence to thousands of Torah topics. And even after his retirement, he continued to write and teach and inspire until the time of his passing at the very young age of 72 years old.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
I don't want to correct the announcer, but it's Judaism 101.9, please. This is Judaism 101.9, Rabbi Michael Katz with you, and hoping to share the next half an hour or so with you until we go off at about 5 to 2. It's great to be in your company. 5 to 3, sorry. Great to be in your company and to share some thoughts about Judaism with you. We're going on with a couple of dates that are coming up in the next few days. So Friday, the 25th of Cheshvan, is the date of passing the Yahrzeit of Reb David Ibn Zimra in 1574. Now, he was known as the Radvaz. Ibn Zimra Radvaz was a great rabbi and scholar who led the Jewish communities of Egypt and Tzfas for 60 years. He was held in high esteem by his contemporary, author of 3,000 responsa covering a vast array of topics, and amongst his most famous students were Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, the Arizal, and Rabbi Tzalel Ashkenazi, the order of Shita Mekubetzes. It is said that Eliyahu Hanovi revealed himself to him. So, great man, passed away on the 21st of Cheshvan in 1574. And then it's also the Yahrzeit on the 24th of Cheshvan, a few days from now, where we have the passing of Reb Avrom Azulai in 1643. The relevance here is Reb Avrom was a famous Kabbalist who resided in Hebron. Listen to it. He resided in Hebron, in Yerushalayim, and in Gaza. Reb Avrom was a famous Kabbalist who resided in Hebron, Yerushalayim, and Gaza. He authored Chesed Avrom, was a great-grandfather of Reb Chaim Yosef David Azulai, who was known as the Chiddo. Reb Avrom's signature had the appearance of a ship to commemorate the time when the ship he was traveling on capsized along with all his possessions, but he was miraculously saved. Now, why I keep on talking about these great people is because I'd like to focus today a little bit on a statement that we try and live up to in our daily Jewish lives, and appropriate, therefore, for Judaism 101.9, where we think about the idea of Maase Avos Siman Labanim, Maase Avot Siman Labanim. The actions of our fathers are a sign for the children. What does that mean? You know, I think that if we go all the way back in Torah and we think about all our Torah giants, from Avraham Avinu, who we've been living with in the parashas of the week, and I often mention that this is not a parasha shir, but just for reference purposes, we are looking back at the greats of Avraham, of Yitzchok, of Yaakov. Those, of course, were our avot. Those were our forefathers, the originators of Judaism. Avraham Avinu, Abraham, holding the title of being the first Jew. What does it mean that he was the first Jew? The Ramban, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachmanides, said that we've got to look in the context of Avraham, not at the biography that is written about him in the Torah, because there is none until it says Lech Lecha, until it tells us that he was told to get up and go. So what was the mark of being a Jew? It wasn't only that he gave himself a bris, it wasn't only that he discovered God, but he was the first one who heard the call of Lech Lecha. He heard the call of get up and go. In other words, he was listening. He was a listener. One of the marks of being Jewish is the ability to listen, to take on board what is being said to you, to understand what you're being told, to listen. We were listeners at Mount Sinai. We were listeners all through our history. We need to be able to listen. It's not only to hear, because people often say, you know, I hear you. But the question is, am I listening to you? I hear you. Yeah, I hear you. What does that mean? It means I hear that you're making a sound, I hear you're making a noise, I hear you're making a point, but I don't necessarily agree with you. No, this was, I'm listening and I'm doing, I agree and I'm going to go along with it. This was the mark of the first Jew, of Avraham Avinu, of Abraham. But then we have Yitzchak, obedient as he was, went along with his father to the Akedah, age 37 years old, did all sorts of incredible things in his own life. And then we have Yaakov Avinu, Jacob, once again. An example, a living example, all the time back then, And then we keep on saying that these great people, Lo Mesu, they didn't die. They continue in their life's teachings for each and every one of us all the time. But then there are others. There are other people who refer to as Avot. You know, we have a whole tractate called Pirkei Avot, and whichever way you look at it, because there are some that say that it's not necessarily talking about the people who said the things that they said, but rather the axioms, the major principles that they taught for ethical behavior, for right behavior, for correct posture in our humanity and society and in our Judaism and in our communities, in our families and so on. Yes, those may be avot principles, but they were also avot, the people who said them. And so we have this idea that great tzaddikim, righteous people, are regarded as our avot. There was also the famous idea that teachers were often referred to as avot. People often referred to themselves in Jewish history as being the son of a certain person, where they weren't necessarily their biological children. They were actually just their students, and they referred to their teachers as their parents. And so when we think about Maase Avot Siman Labanim, when we think about the actions of our forefathers, of our fathers, of those who come before us being a Siman, a sign for the children, it doesn't say there that it is the words of our fathers that are a Siman Labanim. It doesn't say there it was the things that they taught, but rather Maase Avot, the actions. You know, we learn a lot from what people say, but we learn a tremendous amount more from what people do. And we can really think about this in terms of our forefathers, our fathers, those who come before us, and how much we need to acknowledge, look at, and learn from the things that people have done and the behaviors of these great tzaddikim, of these great righteous people in their lives. We think about, for instance, the behavior of Avraham Avinu. So nowhere does it say in Torah that, you know, you have to go off and be enthusiastic about welcoming guests, for instance. Avraham Avinu teaches us that. He teaches us that by his actions. Wayfarers pass by, he jumps up and he runs to greet them. And he was busy with the highest form of interaction at that moment, busy, as we're told, just with talking to God Almighty. And he said, God, do me a favor. I've got something that I've got to do here. There are three people that I can see in the distance. I don't know who they are. Passes by. I need to run to greet them. Why? Myself, a similar volume. It's got to be an action that we learn from, that we learn from that, that this is the attitude, this is the way that we are supposed to treat our guests. Yeah. You can have the most lavish and beautiful and wonderful opportunity, meal, time, Yom Tov, Shabbos, whatever, where you invite people over and there's great food and there's great drink and there's wonderful challahs, there's all sorts of great things. But the host is not so keen to have the people around the table. And there's got to be an attitude of how to welcome guests that we've got to learn from our fathers. The attitude, the application, the idea of manners. You know, I remember years ago attending a school meeting where a particular psychologist was talking about children's behaviors and thinking about why children behave in the way that they do and so on, and giving some tips to parents as to how to get your kids to toe the line, how to get your kids to do what you want them to do, how do you get them to behave in class, in school, at home, etc. And a particular parent then asked the question by introducing it as follows, by saying, you know, what happens if you've got a child who just won't listen? What happens if you've got a kid who just won't listen? Whatever you say, they just won't listen. And I remember clearly the psychologist kind of blew the whole hall away, never mind the person had asked the question, with the following kind of an answer. And he said, you know, if you or your family were told that you're going to go and live in China, and you had 6 months to get ready to live in China, one of the things you would have to do is to try and learn a little bit of Chinese. So you would get some self-help books, you'd go onto the internet perhaps, you would listen to some, in those days it was tapes, CDs, whatever it is, you would listen to some lectures on Chinese, on how the language works. You would do a little bit of a crash course maybe with a friend or neighbor who's Chinese, and you would get some tips on how to say basic words. And then you would progress from there, and hopefully by the time you were living in China and you've been there for several years, you would be more or less fluent in Chinese. He said, but you would never, ever have the accent, the intonation, the ability to speak Chinese properly. But take a child, so now you're an adult with a developed mind. Take a child who we often think doesn't have that developed mind, but they very much do. You take a little child who's learning a language, whether it's Chinese or it's Greek or it's English or it's Hebrew or Afrikaans or any of the other myriads of languages that there are around the world, learning them as an infant, they learn how to speak that language properly with all the nuances and all the accents and all the sentence structures, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and the vocabulary, and they've got it perfect, and they can do it in less time. It's quite amazing. So he said, why is that? He said, because parents are the best teachers of children. Parents are the most incredible teachers for children of how to speak, how to do things, how to behave. They learn so much from parents, and they are mimicking you. They're imitating you, not only in how you speak, but in what you do, in your mannerisms, in all of those things. Children copy what the parents do, what they say, and then eventually, actually, what they think. And we've got to remember this important thing, he said, that if your child is just not listening, there's a pretty good chance that he's seen that in you or your family at home, and this is imitating. And you've got to be careful of that. Yes, it may be simplistic, but you've got to be careful that you are not imparting certain things to kids where you say something that you shouldn't have said, where you behave in a manner that you shouldn't have behaved, that you shouldn't have done. And this is one of the things that we build up to with this idea of Maisa over Simon Labonim. We've got to remember that not only are our forefathers and their behaviors a sign for our children in how to behave, in how to do things, in what to do from a Jewish point of view, but we've got to remember that the most prolific, profound, and important teachers of children are you. You as the mother, or you as the father, you as the parents of children at home, in every behavior. If you're using curse words at home, you've got to be sure that your children are going to learn that and know that and do that in the most simple way in their lives. If you are shouting and screaming and throwing your toys out the cot at each other at home, you've got to remember that that's what your children are going to relate to and understand and know is a mode of behavior between a husband and wife, etc., etc., etc. We've got to remember that our kids imitate us. We've got to remember that we follow the lead of those who are above us, much as we may dislike it, much as we don't think that it was right, we're still going to do it, we're still going to imitate, we're still going to follow that. It's an amazing psychology, and myself a similar bonim. We've got to be able to set the right tone, just like we learn the most beautiful things from Avraham, from Yitzchak, from Yaakov, from David HaMelech, from Shlomo HaMelech, and from all the people, all the great sages of the Talmud, all the great rebbes, and so on. It's not only from what they taught, but from their behaviors that we learn a tremendous amount, and therefore we too need to be careful in our behaviors that we do things right and that we do things correctly and that we behave in a way that is worth imitating.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and welcome back. Yes, Rabbi Michael Katz here with you on Judaism 101.9. Great to be with you. And we're talking about Maisa Ovis Simon Labonim, which means that the actions of the fathers are a sign for the children. don't you often think about the fact that we kind of speak the way that that our parents did, and not only because of their accents, but the phraseology that they used, or the behaviors that they did, the way that they behaved, we often imitate. And sometimes it's the very things, as we mentioned before, that you didn't like, that you find yourself doing, and you say to yourself, how could I be doing that? I hated when my father or my mother said that or did that or behaved in that fashion. And why? Because it's something that's kind of ingrained in us. And we need to have the same type of attitude, according to Jewish thought, we need to have the same kind of attitude of looking at the behaviors of the greats of Judaism, our forefathers, our Torah giants, our avot in that sense, and of course imahot, our mothers as well, we've got to have the same kind of an attitude of recognizing that what they did was so great that this is something we need to take on board, we want to take on board, and we need to live by and we need to live up to. Imitate the way that they did things, their enthusiasm for doing what God beckoned. If we think about, once again, Avram Avinu, Abraham, who we're living with in all the parshas that we're reading at the moment, we are living with Avram Avinu. What did he do that was so exceptional? It wasn't only what he did, it was the way that he did it. The fact that when God calls on him to do something, as difficult as it may seem, as much as it may seem completely illogical, as much as it may seem way beyond his reach, he gets up early in the morning and he does it with enthusiasm. It is something that he does with all his lev v'nefesh, with all his heart and soul. He goes into it with a dynamic and proud and great view of, I am doing what God wants from me. And this is an incredible link, a thread that runs through all of his life. And we think about the same thing when it comes to people like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moses. What was known about Moshe Rabbeinu, besides the fact that he led the Jewish people out of Egypt, besides for the fact that he grew up in Egypt as a prince, besides the fact that he saved us from the slavery and brought us to the Torah and got us the Torah and interpreted it and so on. We know all of those incredible feats of this incredible leader and individual, but the way he went about things, the actions, the anivut, the modesty and the humility, and never claiming credit for himself. It wasn't about him, it was about his people. And the leadership that he showed in putting his people before him. It wasn't only Avram Avinu, Abraham, who tries to defend Sodom and Gomorrah and its destruction by trying to find some kind of a point, a reason why God should not destroy them. But you have the classical example with Moshe Rabbeinu, who stood up for his people to the extent that when God wanted to destroy them, he said, no, like over my dead body, I won't allow this. I'm not going to allow you, God, although you're much more powerful than me and much greater than me. But you want to know something, if you're going to do that, if you're going to behave in that fashion, I would rather that you take me out of your book, strike my name from the record. I don't want to be involved in something like that because my people are my people. I'll stay with them. I'll be with them. I'll die with them. I'll do whatever I need to do in order to make sure that they are not harmed, even if it means that I need to stand up to you, God, and make sure that they survive to tell the tale. So an incredible, incredible lesson in things that we should emulate and imitate from our avot. And of course, the people that we've been mentioning here, whether it was the Rebbe Rashab, whether it was the birthday tonight and tomorrow of the Rebbe Rashab of Rabbi Shalom Dovber of Lubavitch, or whether it was or it is Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, whose yahrzeit is tomorrow, we need to remember that they too, as leaders of the Jewish people, showed an incredible example of how they stood up to the outside world, how they dealt with the outside world, and they taught us too how to behave through their actions.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. Yes, we're at the tail end of our show today. We're coming to the end with a bit of a sum up, and we're thinking about Maisa Ovis Simon Labonim, the idea of what our forefathers did, their actions, not necessarily only what they taught, which of course we got to learn from, but it was their actions, the things that they did. You know, if you think about the way you make Kiddush on a Friday night or on a Shabbos, surely it needs to be the way that you saw your father do it. If you think about the way you, if you're a male, you put on tefillin, or a girl, you light your Shabbos candles, you do it the way that your mother taught you. It is not something that you need to be sat down and told, this is how you do it. We imitate, we copy, and it is necessary, therefore, number one, for the avot, for the fathers to know that what they're doing is going to be imitated. And it's also necessary for the imitator to know that what their parents taught them or are teaching them are right or correct or good things, and they are worth imitating, worth emulating, worth living up to the examples. Hopefully we can live up to the examples of our avot, of our fathers, of our mothers, of those who have trodden this earth before us, and hopefully we too can therefore blaze a trail forward that in itself is also with imitating, emulating, and copying, and that in this way we can carry forth the message of Torah, of Yiddishkeit, of Judaism, of a good life, of morality, of ethics to our children, then to our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, and then on way beyond that into the future. I want to wish you a great rest of the week, a great Shabbat up ahead, a beautiful Shabbos weekend, and looking forward to being back with you same time, same place, again next week on Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock for another exciting episode of Judaism 101.9.